there, this is Lynn Perrott and Dave Jeffrey welcoming you to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Today we're looking at planning for your retirement and how to make a good financial future. I guess they go hand in hand. Your digital footprint, access to social media. And here's an interesting one, dance away dementia. And if you want to travel but you're not too steady, here's how to travel the world on your scooter. Okay, Lynn, what have we got first up today?
Planning for retirement. This is information from the Australian Woman's Health Diary of 2019. Calculating how much income you'll need when you retire will determine your financial strategies now. Check your entitlements. Contact the Department of Human Services to see if you qualify for the age pension or a part pension. From age 60, you may also be able to apply for a seniors card, which gives you access to a range of discounts on travel and some retail services. Seek financial advice. A financial advisor can give you a thorough overview of your financial situation and help you create a future plan. They can also help you protect assets or avoid expensive investment risks. When choosing a financial planner, make sure they're registered on the Financial Advisors Register. Salary sacrifice into super. Start making extra contributions to your super by deducting an additional amount from your pre-tax wage, separate to your employer's regular contributions. Super contributions are taxed at 15%, which for most people is less than your marginal tax rate, the highest rate you pay on your earnings. Check the limit for concessional contributions, your employer payments, and any extra payments you make. Budgeting 101. Setting a budget is the best way to get your finances on track and keep them there. And it's not as hard as you might think. Start by putting together an annual budget, which will give you a clear picture of your incomings, the money coming in, versus all your outgoings, the money you spend, including big ticket items like car insurance, holidays, and school fees. While it might take time to list everything, your efforts will give you a better idea of where your money is going, how you might make some savings, for example, by reviewing your utility suppliers, and help set your savings goals. Breaking this down into a weekly or fortnightly budget can also help you see those everyday costs, like TV subscriptions or dinners out, which can quickly add up and eat into the money you could be saving. Step 1. Note your net income. Gather your pay slips from any full and or part-time work or invoices if you're self-employed. If your income is unreliable, make an estimate based on last year's earnings. Also include any money earned from investments, government benefits, and pension or child support payments. Tip: be as accurate as possible so you have a clear picture of what you're working with. Step 2. Track your spending. List all fixed expenses such as rent, mortgage, rates or strata fees, utility bills, add up over the year, then divide by 12 for a monthly budget, and transport costs, such as car insurance and registration. Now write down all your variable expenses, groceries, entertainment, petrol, medical, clothes, gifts and maintenance. Compare the two figures from steps 1 and 2. Ideally, you want your incomings to be higher than your outgoings. If you're spending more than you earn, you'll need to make some serious adjustments. Tip: to find this information, check your credit card and bank statements. Step 3. Set goals. Make some short-term goals that take a year or less to achieve, such as a holiday, and then set some longer-term goals. These can be achievable over 5 to 10 years, such as a deposit on a home loan. Tip: stay motivated by creating a financial vision board for items on your wish list. Step 4. Write your plan. Break things down to make your goals less intimidating or overwhelming. For example, if your goal is to set up an emergency savings fund of $2,000 within a year, divide 2,000 by 52 weeks so you know you'll need to set aside $38.50 each week. Tip: don't be too strict on yourself. You want to save, not suffer, so allow some money for fun and leisure. Step 5. Change bad habits. Taking a good look at your outgoings can help you see where you can cut back and where you might be overspending. Are you having too many takeaway coffees or buying too many presents for the grandkids? Tip: write down your daily expenses and ask a friend, colleague, or family member to review them to help keep you accountable. Step 6. Keep checking in. Continue to revisit your budget as regularly as needed to ensure it reflects your current income and spending goals. Tip: reward yourself each time you manage to save a certain amount. Maybe an inexpensive bunch of flowers for your home, a long soak in the tub, or watching the latest episode of your favourite TV show. And that was information on budgeting and retirement plans from the Australian Women's Health Diary of 2019.
Thanks, Lynn. Following on from there in the same vein, I guess we're going to look now at the financial side of it.
This is an article called Take Charge of Your Financial Future. Make your financial path as smooth and obstacle-free as possible by taking the following practical and productive steps. Take a short course in managing your money and planning for your financial future. Visit the Australian Government websites moneysmart.gov.au and business.gov.au, which both run free financial seminars. Revise all your insurance policies, car, house, medical, pets, life, whenever they're up for renewal, to ensure you're covered for the right things and getting the best deal. Some companies offer multi-policy discounts. Most health insurance policies rise on April 1st, so you can avoid paying the increase for 12 months by paying your existing premium before March 31st. Stagger bills and ask your utility provider, gas, electricity or water, if you can make fortnightly or monthly payments rather than receiving the entire bill in one go. Save on staples. Buy in bulk for essentials with long shelf lives like toilet paper, toothpaste, soap, school supplies, laundry powder, pasta and rice. Sell any household items you no longer need on eBay, Gumtree or local buy, swap and sell sites, or hold a garage sale. See a financial planner to help you set goals for today and the future. Ask your super fund, accountant or lawyer for recommendations. Before you lock yourself in, be sure you understand the fees involved. The first meeting is usually free. Take the time to learn about the stock market before investing, or if you don't have a lot of money to play with, consider a managed fund, which pulls together money from individual investors. See your bank or financial planner for advice. Consolidate your super by rolling multiple funds into one, if there are no fees involved. Watch the performance of your super fund, but think long-term, not short-term. Super is a lifetime investment, so 1 year's returns are not a good reason to swap funds. Look at your fund's performance over at least a 5-year period, and when comparing funds, make sure the funds focus on similar investments, such as cash or fixed interest or property and shares. You may find super comparison websites a helpful tool for this. Lastly, protect yourself against online shopping scams by ensuring your computer antivirus software is up to date and scrutinising websites before making purchases. Look for a closed padlock next to the URL. And that was information on how to manage one's financial future from the Australian Women's Health Diary of 2019.
Thank you. Some good advice there, Lynn. Well, now we're going to look at how to travel the world on your scooter. Now, if you've got mobility problems, do not let that stop you travelling anywhere in the world. Listen to this. Fold, pack, travel. This is the freedom that's offered by the new generation of mobility scooters. Clever engineering has transformed the lumbering, awkward beasts of yesterday into the nifty, lightweight, yet still sturdy travel scooters of today. It's the Luggy Scooter. It's the first of its new type of a portable scooter to gain popularity. It's arguably still the best of the pack. Sitting on one, you can feel that it's well-built and it's stable. And riding around is intuitive and smooth. With puncture-proof tyres and, as of 2019, upgraded suspension, the Luggy is both resilient and comfortable. Additionally, the motor powers the rear axle, not the front. Now, this is important because unlike some of its competitors, it means that it can handle bumps and slopes. It folds into a compact shape, roughly a cube. It's easily small enough to fit into the boot of your car. This takes under a minute, and with practice, under 20 seconds. The Luggy also has the option to be folded into a flat board shape, which can then be levered into the boot. This effectively halves the weight for those who otherwise might find it a bit tough. So what about the travel part? Well, scooters, like the Luggy, have been designed specifically with travel in mind. Indeed, people have taken their Luggies all over the world, by land, by sea, and by air. When travelling by plane, there are some easily regulatory hoops to jump through, a few forms to sign, but by now airlines are used to accommodating mobility scooters. It's possible to ride your scooter right to the point of boarding. It will then be waiting for you at your destination, ready to take you anywhere you want to go. Luggy owners have truly pushed the limit, from South Africa to Iceland, and from Vietnam to Monument Valley. Now, I'll come back in a moment and give you more details how to find out this. Okay, like more information, sounds great. www.scootersoz.com.au. I'll say that again. Now that's scooters AUS, so it's scootersoz.com.au. Now I know that was an advertisement for Scooters Oz, but I hope it might help you. It's back to you now, Lynn, as we look at something very important to us all.
Your digital footprint. Your social media accounts and the images on them should be considered as part of estate planning. After the loss of a loved one, it's only natural to want to collate their images as keepsakes to share among family members. But in the digital age, social media accounts such as Facebook and Instagram can add another layer of complexity to the grieving process. The content of social media accounts, known as a digital footprint, is proving to be a grey area within estates. If direct access has not been granted by the deceased, who owns the footprint? Estate managers say people rarely give any thought to their digital footprint when making a will, but estate planners can assist families to ensure valuable digital memories and information are protected for the future. The treatment of social media accounts and content is an issue that should be incorporated into all estate planning considerations. For close relatives and friends, the real meaning of many of these social media platforms is access to the photographs and images saved there. Different social media platforms have different procedures and actions that occur on a user's death. But the options for family members are usually to have the account memorialized or closed. Facebook, the most popular platform, allows users to nominate a legacy contact who can control what happens on the account on the user's death. Instagram will memorialize an account on the death of the user if a family member requests it. Estate planners can help guide the conversation with family members so images are not lost forever once an account is closed. In the past, if you asked people what they would save in the event of a fire, they said they would grab their photo albums. but we have shifted our minds from a focus on physical things, and many people store their important documents and treasured photographs using digital methods, such as backup, electronic devices, and online storage. This creates another level of complexity as people need to provide passwords and access codes to loved ones with whom they want to share their images and valuables. Regularly storing and backing up photographs is an important part of the process. And that article concerns one's digital footprint to be considered when making a will, from the Flourish magazine of autumn 2019.
You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network, a program sponsored by the Seniors' Rights Service.
This is an interesting article from the That's Entertainment section of the Sunday Mail of August 2019, Dance Away Dementia. If music, as Shakespeare wrote, be the food of love, then dance, it would seem, be the food of memory. In 2017, scientists at the German Centre for Neurodegenerative Diseases published the results of an 18-month trial involving a group of elderly volunteers to explore the anti-aging benefits of dancing compared to other forms of exercise. The volunteers, with an average age of 68, were split into two groups. The first performed traditional exercises involving mainly repetitive movements for 90 minutes at a time. The second was asked to learn a variety of dancing steps and choreography. The results published in the journal Frontiers in Human Neuroscience showed that the second group, presented with larger hippocampuses, the region of the brain known to help protect against memory loss and dementia. The reason, scientists concluded, is that the extra challenge required to learn new dance routines results in a reduced loss of brain volume. For Line Dancers of South Australia founder Peter Heath, the news comes as no surprise. We're finding line dancing is keeping people alive and is an active way beyond what they would have been if they hadn't been doing it, he says. There's a lot of mental thinking, planning and remembering. In the 25 years we've been teaching, we are not aware of losing anyone to dementia, which is absolutely amazing. It may look easy, but the intricacy of line dancing, Heath says, is perfect for keeping that brain ticking over. People make it look so simple, but when you actually try it, it's not, which is a good thing because it challenges you, he says. You're having to learn a new language, you're walking backwards, sideways, doing turns, so there are muscles and directions that are not natural body mechanics in normal life. Pat Nagel, 84, from Dover Gardens, enjoys the challenge of learning new routines, even if she doesn't always get it right. The hardest part for me is remembering the move, she says. But it doesn't matter if you make a mistake. Nobody cares. Everybody makes mistakes and then you just do it again. There's no competition. And it's not just the brain that feels the benefits of line dancing. It's pretty good for the body and the soul too. One of its attractions for many participants is that you don't need a partner. Just join the line and off you go. I started dancing when I was separated, says Margie Bird, 69, from Trot Park. You can come along and don't need to have someone to come with you. So that was brilliant for me. And it actually gives you a new social environment because our group goes to dinners, shows and other activities through the friendships we've formed. Her fellow dancer, Tony Chai, 80, from Prospect, agrees. I like dancing, but my wife doesn't dance, so at least I am able to dance by myself, he says. It's good exercise for me, and also you socialise, which is quite important. Everyone here is a friend. Keeping physically and mentally active at every age inspired Joe McDonald to create the Move Through Life Dance School, giving people the chance to dance throughout their life. People get to around 18 or early 20s and work, life, study and all those things take over and they give up dancing, she says. But they still have this yearning inside of them. McDonald runs a range of weekly classes aimed at mature age dancers, including jazz, tap, ballet and dance mix. It's really taken off. There's an incredible amount of interest in the over 50s for dancing, she says. We have a specialist over 50 program, but we also have a lot of people who are over 50 in our regular classes. So we have a really lovely mix of ages. Like her dancing compatriot Heath, McDonald has also witnessed the mental benefits of dancing in her senior students. A lot of people tell me it's a workout for their brain as well as their body because they're having to coordinate, pick up new information quickly, recall information, improve their memory, and use the left and right side of their bodies, she says. They feel like they can handle more complex information better. Retired teacher Robin Watson from Hallett Cove has been coming to dance class since 2004. I was a performing arts teacher in primary school and could never remember the steps, the 58-year-old says with a laugh. Trying to remember the choreography has been really good for helping my brain because I don't want to get dementia when I get older. As with line dancing, classes that move through life don't require a dancing partner, which suits 68-year-old Maureen Sherlock from Merino just perfectly. I love dancing, she says. I've done ballroom and Argentine tango, but they require my husband to be dragged along reluctantly. I thought, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to do dancing for me. And that was an article about complex dance moves that can be good for the brain from the Sunday Mail of August 2019.
Thanks, Lynn. We've got some great pharmaceutical news now. Drug which stops cancer spread is on the PBS. Women whose breast cancer has spread will no longer have to pay a fortune for a drug which prolongs their life after its listing on the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme. It's called Verzenio. It's a treatment for women with cancer that is metastasized, which inhibits proteins that control how fast cells grow. The proteins, called CDK4 and 6, become overactive in metastatic breast cancer. This causes cells to grow and divide uncomfortably. The drug will treat postmenopausal women with advanced hormone receptor-positive human epidermal growth. This is a factor receptor 2 negative breast cancer. Patients have been paying up to nearly $60,000 a year for Verzenio. But this listing on the PBS reduces the drug to just $41 per script, or there is a concessional patient's rate of $6.60 per script. Sydney oncologist Dr. Fran Boyle said the drug could double the life expectancy for those with metastatic cancer. She said it's a tablet that you add to your hormone-blocking treatment. It makes it work better, simple as that. It supercharges the hormones, blocking other treatments that we have been using. Average survival times can be increased to 2 years. Well, that sounds fantastic, and if it pertains to you, the drug is called Verzenio. You might like to inquire about it.
It's dementia. What next? Retired psychologist Bobby Redman was in her mid-60s when she noticed problems remembering the names of close friends and would have trouble finding the right words to express herself. 2 years ago, age 66, Bobby was told she had frontotemporal dementia. Now she is helping others who have been diagnosed with dementia and who live at home cope with their prognosis. Bobby is a peer supporter for a new University of Sydney trial, which offers coaching and support to help people deal with their prognosis and stay active and involved in the community. My story is a bit different because with my psychology background, I knew something was definitely wrong. But a dementia diagnosis is still a shock for anyone, she said. And what's probably hardest is that, like in my experience, many people with early dementia are just told to come back when things get worse or to get their things in order. She said there are tools and strategies to help manage the impact of dementia. Even simple things like using my phone to set daily reminders to drink water and stay hydrated. The Dementia Lifestyle Coach pilot study is a collaboration between the university's Faculty of Health Sciences and Brain and Mind Centre. Participants receive 14 counselling and coaching sessions from a registered psychologist over 6 months and will also have regular phone or Skype catch-ups with a peer supporter. Lead researcher Associate Professor Lee Fei-Lo said the pilot study has the potential to fill a vital service gap, and keeping the mind and body active could slow the progression of dementia. Following a dementia diagnosis, many people withdraw from their friends and family for fear they will deteriorate quickly and can suffer immense grief or depression, she said. There are over 400,000 Australians living with dementia, and with a cure still some way off, it's essential we help people with early dementia to live well. We hope that giving people the right support, tools and strategies from the onset could help achieve this. Bobby wants to see more clinicians trained to provide strategies to help people overcome simple issues. I want to try and help people see they can fight back. I think that's the key. You can't just give into it, she said. The pilot will run for 12 months. People who've received a diagnosis of early dementia within the past 6 months are eligible.
Well, that's all we have time for in the program today. Lynn Perrott, I'd like to say thanks so much to you for doing all that reading excellently, and I look forward to working with you again soon. You have been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network, a program sponsored by Seniors Rights Service.